What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 19th. Happy Friday, everybody. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. By the way, if you enjoyed it last week, I had my SP Fab Forecast podcast. It's a wonderful name. Thank you so much. That is a weekly rundown of the guys I am sitting starting next week, a full grid of my sit start for the next week, as well as my rankings for two star pitchers. And it's a podcast dedicated to your fab decisions for your 12 teamers and your 15 teamers on Sunday for that fab run. That is a PL Pro exclusive podcast. I did a free episode of it last week, so go check it out inside the PitcherList Fantasy Baseball feed if you want to get a good teaser for it. But I do that every single Friday, and if you want access to that moving forward, including my schedule grid image and, of course, the two-star pitcher rankings image, you have to be a PL Pro subscriber. So go to pitcherlist.com/premium today. Sign up for that. You can use code podcast, all in capital letters, to get a discount for that. But I hope that you enjoy today's episode. We have Kenta Maeda going yesterday. 2.2 innings of 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. We watched this as a community at playback.tv/pitcherlist as it was Jack Leiter's MLB debut. And that was really fun. And I got to act like a radio announcer for 2 hours. And it was a great time. Except for both pitchers, I don't know, not being good. Especially Kenta Maeda. I mean, we're at a point where it's interesting. In the preseason, Kenta Maeda, I felt, wasn't getting enough love. This was a guy with a 25% plus strikeout rate forever. Really never not being that on the Tigers and looking like he had a decent schedule early on and all of that. And what we've seen is a guy who just is not getting the strikes he used to. His fastball velocity has declined under 90 miles per hour. He's not sneaking into the zone effectively. He's not getting the slider whiffs and really dominating with that. And then the splitter is his crux, but it's not always so great. And it just isn't enough anymore. And with a guy like Maeda who does not have a good fastball, it's really important that the secondary stuff is effective consistently. And we often say that those that age well are ones that rely more on secondaries than heaters, because the fastball velocity is going to go down, but as long as you're still getting movement and command on your secondaries, then you can still generate tons of outs. Yes, this was against the Rangers. I also saw someone that was just struggling and just not able to be the guy that he used to be. And it's really been that way a lot this year. I've called him a cherry bomb. It's kind of, you don't know what you're going to get. Each day that you will have some starts that are good. I'm very much in the side now of just saying, yeah, this is really hard to watch, and I don't really think it's going to get so much better. It could. Last year, we saw a little bit of this where the first month or two, he was struggling with the IL and really had a nice run from June onward when he did return. But Kenta Maeda, to me right now, is just someone I don't really want to go for. On the other side of that was Jack Leiter. And watching this one with the pitchless community was just so much fun, because I got to talk live about all the pitch decisions he's making and what I like that he's doing and what I don't like. In the first inning, he was nibbling a little too much. And that's a constant thing you see in MLB debuts, is where a lot of pitchers come up and they think, okay, I need to be perfect. I need to showcase my best self. I need to do this exactly right because I need to showcase how good I am. And what happened is that his slider was missing just off the plate a good amount. He wasn't getting those strikes on it. In the strike zone plot, it looks like they were strikes, but they weren't getting called it. It didn't look like they were inside the box as far as when we were watching it. So Leiter was a little off with everything. There were some at-bats that were great where he was able to go four seamers upstairs properly, have a really nice change up to a lefty. But then there were others where he just couldn't execute it. There was a home run allowed to Jonah Heim where it was him trying to throw a changeup away for two straight pitches and then went with a fastball trying to go away. And all three of those were in the nitro zone for a lefty that is down and inside. And what bothered me there was that Jack Leiter wasn't making the adjustment. What makes veterans really good is that they can throw a bad pitch and say, okay, cool, that is not the one I want to do. I know why I got that one wrong. I'm going to make sure and calibrate differently and not do that again. The fact that Leiter missed in the same spot 3 times and then allowed a home run was deserved punishment, right? And there's a thing to be said about that. It's not just, oh, you make one mistake and they capitalize in it. You make the mistake, but you have to then rectify, right? You're allowed to make every mistake once, and there are always exceptions to that rule. But that's something I think about a lot is, yeah, you're going to make a mistake, you learn from that. And he didn't quite. Now, when it comes to his four-seamer, Jack Leiter does have good pitch metrics across the board. His attack angle is excellent. It is, I think, I want to say like 85th percentile for a four-seamer, essentially saying maybe 90th percentile. It is excellent and should live upstairs constantly. He has good extension. He has good IVB. It's like, it's above average. It's not, oh my gosh, 18 inches of IVB or so, but it's good. It's going to work. And then, of course, he's throwing, 96, 97 on there too, right? So that's all great. Does Jack Leiter have good enough control to be able to live inside the zone at the top of the zone and then being able to spot those sliders down and changeups down and curveballs? Actually, introduced the curveball later on, which was kind of nice, actually, the really quick third inning because of that curveball introduction, and that worked. I don't know if Jack Leiter does yet. And it's possible this just was a control game that was, all right, it's your MLB debut, and I'm not going to have my best control because I have all these jitters and adrenaline and mentality and stuff. And, you know, Kyle Bodie says that the first year should just be thrown away when it comes to command for rookies, which tells me that, okay, maybe by the second start, I shouldn't expect it to be better. But let's say that Jack Leiter does stick around. I don't know if the Rangers are going six man. I don't know if this was just giving guys a day of rest. I don't know what this is. If Jack Leiter does stick around for the Mariners, I would at least give it a shot and say, you know what, maybe he does improve on this one. This was the Tigers, that's the Mariners. But maybe he won't throw a meatball fastball first pitch with first and second nobody out to Javier Baez, which I cannot believe they did. That was such a meaty, like, inner half fastball, like down inner half, beautiful spot for Baez just to rip a double off the wall. And he was just like, oh man, thank you so much. I'm so happy I had this single and this hit. Like, yeah, because it was the most gifted pitch you could hope for, Javi. But yeah, anyway, Jack Leiter, I could see getting that polish and being something legit, but he's not there yet. And you don't feel like you need to hold on to Jack Leiter. All right, there are other guys, of course, to talk about from yesterday's games, and we're going to talk about today and tomorrow's starters after this break. Ryan Nelson pitched against the Giants. He was my stream pick of the day, and then he left because he took a comebacker to the elbow. It went two innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 0 walks, and 0 Ks. Not a single whiff, though. And I do want to mention that before the comebacker, Ryan Nelson was not pitching to his best ability. 93.8, not 95, 96 on the fastball. His cutter didn't get any whiffs. His four-seamer didn't get any whiffs. I mean, it wasn't great Ryan Nelson for those two innings, but it was against the Giants, so he got through it. But yeah, I don't feel like you need to hold on to Ryan Nelson right now. Also, we don't really know when he's going to start next. Logan Webb did great, though. 7 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. He got the win. Sweeper was just 3 over 21 whiffs. And really, that's why I lowered Logan Webb. I really was hoping in some way that, hey, here's this great floor. You have something else to stand on top of to be something more than this. If you do get your slider back or your sweeper back, just some breaking ball that gets whiffs consistently. He doesn't have that still. While that changeup, I gotta say, guys, his changeup is just so stupid good. He spots it perfectly. I mean, it is just absolutely a marvel how well Logan Webb can just say, great, here's a changeup that is just barely out of the zone every single time. And batters just don't know. They just don't know. Is this going to be a strike? Is it not? They're going to, I think it was 23 times contact was made yesterday, 13 fouls and 10 in play, and it's just brilliant. It's so good. And that's such a great skill, and it's why Logan Webb is going to be able to go 7 innings, because he's going to get those outs all the time. Just doesn't mean he's going to get the strikeouts. Yes, I know volume, but it's still just 5 Ks, so it's not like 7 strikeouts each time, 8 strikeouts. Brendan Bernardino opened for Cooper Criswell, who only went 2.1 innings and allowed 4 runs. It was just 1 earned. 3 hits, 1 walk, but 0 Ks. And it's just like, all right, we don't need to chase this win like a vulture win. On the other side of it was Carlos Carrasco, though. Big props to him. Maybe it was a birthday party. It wasn't so good of a game. Like, it was 5.2 innings of 200 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts. He got the win. 90-91, though, on the fastball. And, like, changeups and sliders were doing everything. So it was inside of Fenway. Props to him. Josh Mockenstern said to me, like, hey, man, I wanted you to have, like, here's a cookie, like not quite a birthday party, but obviously Cookie Carrasco being his name. I thought that was wonderful, and in retrospect, I wish I did that. But yeah, we don't want to do Carrasco moving forward. And the last game here is the Angels versus the Rays. Griffin Canning was PL Bot's pick of the day, and we are tied, and it's wonderful because PL Bot's killing it. 5.1 innings of 200 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. He had a tough first inning, and then he settled down. He had some really nice changeups. He had a really good, the changeup was 93% strike rate, which is absurd. 14 for 15, which is crazy. He did have a little more velo. It was up a tick. So instead of at 92 and change, it was 93, 94. Great to see that. A slider had a 35% CSW. He is still hittable, I think, inside the zone. And I'm a little tepid, but the Rays are just not doing well. And I think he took advantage of that one. That's cool. And last but not least, speaking of the Rays, you have Ryan Pepiot, who came through exactly as you wanted him to. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 7 strikeouts. He had a golden goal, 17 whiffs, 32% CSW, which is surprisingly the golden, the King Cole. But then again, you realize that it was an opener for the Red Sox. He had Jack Leiter and Kenta Maeda. Then you had Carlos Carrasco, 26% CSW, Griffin Canning, 27%. And Logan Webb at 29. Like, literally no one else had a 30% CSW in this game, in this night. So let's just say he gets a Gallows pull, really. Anyway, Ryan Pepiot is throwing his four-seamer upstairs, but it wasn't really the pitch that took over here. And normally you would think, oh yeah, the changeup, right? That's the one. Honestly, he shelved it in this one. He only threw, like, I want to say like 10 changeups, something like that. And it was way into sliders. 10 for 38 sliders. Whiffs, 10 for 38, which is amazing. 39% CSW. That's so good for Ryan Pepiot. It is the Angels. And I don't think he like spotted it really well. It actually reminded me of Zach Littell a bit, of just so comfortably in the zone. So I'm fine with that though, because Ryan Pepiot is more of a four-seamer changeup guy. And if you're telling me that you also have a slider that can go 39% CSW across 38 thrown, that's an addition that I'd expect you to have. All right, for today and tomorrow's games, there was a rainout yesterday. I only had 8 guys to write about, and it was already only 10, but then turned into 8 because we had a rainout. That is the Marlins and the Cubs. That's going to be a doubleheader tomorrow. So yesterday, starters at AJ Puck and Jameson Taillon are going today, so make sure you have that shift, but it's everything else is the same. I do want to note, though, Tristan McKenzie admitted that, yeah, I'm throwing through a hurt elbow. Like, it's a torn UCL. That was partially torn last year. He had that strain, if you remember, and it didn't fully heal. This is like what happens when we see a strained UCL. Sometimes it, or forearm strain or whatever it is, we don't know if it's fully healed or not. It is not, and we could tell, and it makes me kind of hesitant if I really want to have Tristan McKenzie in my questionable start tier. I do want to mention, though, tomorrow is interesting. We have some changes here. So Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burns, Cole Reagans, Zach Gallen, Luis Castillo, all clear auto starts. Duh, ace is going to ace. Then the other half of the auto start tiers showed Imanaga, Bailey Ober, Ronel Blanco, Zach Eflin, Cutter Crawford, and Jose Berríos. All those are pretty obvious. I mean, you have Eflin against the Yankees. I think you still do that, clearly. And Jose Berríos is just doing really well against the Padres. We're going to do that, too. Jesús Luzardo against the Cubs is a 50-50 to me. Not really 50-50. You're still going to do it, but it's more than 50-50. It's just, we know that Jesús Luzardo does get punished when you have the slider in the zone, and it's just all a little, hey, are you going to be okay kind of thing, especially with the Cubs. But we're still going to go after that. Nestor Cortez is good. It's not amazing. It's not like the 2022 run of Cortez, and we should just not expect that. But can he be a Holly against the Rays? Yes, probably. So we're good with that. There's an argument to be made that's auto start because it's the Rays, but Cortez always has some weirdness in him. Nathan Eovaldi gets Atlanta, which I know is not fun because it's Atlanta, but Eovaldi is a command pitcher and is able to get through whatever offense. So you're going to do that, but it's not at the level of your aces. So here he is. Now, is it Edward Cabrera tomorrow? It is not. That's going to be pushed until Sunday because the Marlins are going to call up Rodri Munoz. I'll get to him in a moment, but don't expect Edward Cabrera on Saturday. And moving on with this, you have Reese Olson, who's our stream pick of the day, against the Twins. I love that one. His changeup looks really good. You have Gavin Stone against the Mets. The Mets apparently are getting better offensively. I still think that Gavin Stone is solid. I believe he had like 5 perfect innings. I lowered him in my rankings because I'm a little skeptical about his slider and his fastball with his changeup, but I think you're still going to go for this, especially in the team context. And Javier Assad has just done super well, and now he gets the Marlins, who are not a good squad. So you're going to go with that for Assad. There is a chance, I have to mention, that maybe the Cubs do something here like the Marlins are doing, where Assad and Assad gets pushed to the next day. So keep that in mind. In the questionable start tier, you have Logan Allen, Graham Ashcraft, Cal Harrison. So Allen gets the Athletics, debatably deserves into probable start, but I don't really think that Allen is that great. So I'm not really going to say, hey, cool, go after this one. That's what I normally do if I have him in probable. I say, look, this is an option. That's cool. Same with Graham Ashcraft against the Angels. Cal Harrison, I don't really dig what he's doing. And actually, I have him underneath Mitch Keller, who I feel is just a better option against the Red Sox. Being a 50-50 coin flip for a cherry bomb, I'd rather just go with Keller. And it's not in Fenway, it's in PNC Park. While Harrison, I do like that he has his changeup now a major component of his arsenal instead of the curveball, but just not doing everything you want with his fastball. He only earned 3 whiffs on a 4-seamer against the Marlins. That just doesn't seem right to me. Or it doesn't really seem compelling when he did decently locate it too. So it's probably a product of a really low IVB on it. And it's not, yeah, it's just the whole thing's just like, I don't know if Kyle Harrison is so great. Charlie Morton is here against the Rangers. I might even just put him in do not start because, yes, it's a win chance for Atlanta. Yes, he has moments with strikeouts and stuff, but you know the ratio risk is pretty high here. And DL Hall is going against the Cardinals. He does have a decent enough repertoire to be like a Toby, and it's the Cardinals. Is he going to get all the strikeouts that we want? Probably not, but I think that DL Hall is getting better with every start, and hopefully over time he does get that fastball back, and it's the Cardinals, is not so bad. In the do not start tier, there's Jose Budo, who could do really well against the Dodgers. It's absolutely a possibility. I don't think he will. I don't really think there's anything about his arsenal that's just, oh my gosh, that pitch is great, which means he's so reliant on locations, and the Dodgers can punish him quickly. Patrick Sandoval, the Irish Panda, going against the Reds. And that's something that I don't want to go for in Cincy. And his slider and changeup was really good last time, but yeah, that's probably not going to stick. Miles Michaelis against the Brewers. Sure, why not? Maybe. I don't know. Bad fastballs. He's at least going into his secondaries more. But Miles Michaelis just does not do enough. And the aforementioned Roderick Munoz, he's someone who has a good fastball and slider, but the command of it isn't good. He's not getting a ton of whiffs in the minors. He's bounced around a bit. He's, I think the last 3 teams were like the Nationals, the Atlanta, and now Miami. I don't really expect a ton of this. However, the other 5 guys, Michael Soroka, Alex Wood, Randy Vasquez, Trevor Williams, and Kyle Freeland, we all know those floors, and those are bad, and they're very limited upside. So what the heck? If you're going to chase something, why not see if there's a decent debut here for one day, and then he goes back down to the minors. Like, they're just using Munoz for the 27th man so that they can get more out of that extra, you know, get more rest for their starters and get a benefit for the doubleheader. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for listening. And for those that who have PL Pro, if you don't, you can use code podcast at checkout to get a discount on PL Pro. And look forward to the SP Fab Forecast episode I'm putting out later today, covering all of next week's starters and your Sunday Fab bids for 12 and 15 teamers. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.